Oh boy, it is a special midweek edition of the Comedy at the Carlson cast. That's me, Vinny Paulino, your fat but
somewhat also special.
Fat and special host. There's Brian. Get back in your hole, Brian.
Hey, it's me.
We didn't tell Ross Johnson about this show on account of we wouldn't be able to keep him off of Dolph Ziggler. Cam Tiller's here, everybody. We're excited to have our producer Cam here. And our guest, Dolph Ziggler. Back to me, baby. Here we are. The show off Dolph Ziggler is coming today, guys.
I'm very excited. Now, I'm so excited.
Here's the thing. Right now, I'm sure that we have a lot of people who are not necessarily fans of the Comedy at the Carlson cast tuning in and wondering what the hell this show is. We interview comedians. We talk to the greatest comedians in the world. And Dolph Ziggler, you may be a wrestling fan, but you may not know Dolph the way we know Dolph. The man takes comedy seriously. He wants to be a stand-up comic.
He is not just another celebrity-turned-comic because he can. He actually is a genuine comedian.
Some would argue top of his game. Top of his game right now in the world.
I would say,
in terms
yeah.
of wrestling, top of the world. But yet he's doing a show in Rochester, New York because he is dedicated to stand-up comedy.
3 days before Survivor Series.
3 days before Survivor Series.
He's returning
Series.
To Rochester.
Yeah. Three or four, something like that. Yeah,
yeah, and he's doing another show in the Comedy Store in L.A. coming up soon. We're going to talk to him about that. But there are a lot of interesting things that we are planning to discuss with him today. So do us a favor. If you like the show and you never checked us out before, make sure you hit subscribe. If you generally listen to the show and you don't do anything, at least rate and review us, would you please? We're trying hard over here. Now, Brian...
Mm-hmm.
I have to announce a couple of quick things, housekeeping, before we get to our interview today.
Even more?
Yeah, yeah. I got to remind everybody, next Saturday night is our new comic night.
Oh, yeah.
New comic night. Hit that little slide down there, Cam. There it is. Boom. So here's the thing. That slide is wrong, but that's my fault. We are actually, the sign-up starts at 8 o'clock. The show is going to go to 11, but the show is going to start at 9 p.m., and what we're going to do is have 24 open spots. If you've never done comedy before, if you've done comedy professionally or semi-professionally and you just want to get at the door here at the Carlson, show up, fill out one of the little cards, and we're going to do a drawing for those 24 spots, and we are going to put on one hell of a show in the Rickles Room.
Even so, I am not guaranteed a spot.
The only person who's guaranteed a spot on this, Heel Paulino, right here. That's it. But it's going to be really cool, and we're hoping to have a great audience. Bobby Kelly is going to be in the main room, and when that show goes off... when they finish up in there at, I believe, around 9 o'clock, we're going to remind people, come in and see the new comic night.
Yeah, if you're done laughing.
If you're not done laughing, you want some more beers.
Take 30 steps.
Come laugh at these chuckleheads. It'll be good. It'll be very good. So we got that, and I believe, Cam, I need just 1 second here because I'm the worst.
All right.
We have to talk about our sponsors real fast. Can we do that, Cam? Kick out my sponsors. Sapori Cafe and Catering. Delicious. Available in the Powers Building atrium downtown, or they can cater your very own special event. Chef Joe aims to please and shoots to thrill. He makes some amazing grub at Sapori Rochester.
That's another show you used to do.
Yeah, that's why I came off my tongue so quickly. Facebook, Instagram, at Sapori Rochester. Remember, Sapori, it's Italian for flavor.
Flavore.
Not accurate. Three Heads Brewing. Delicious, delicious, delicious. If you're coming to see Dolph Ziggler tonight at Comedy at the Carlson, you're going to want to grab yourself a Three Heads Drafts. They're up there right now. I believe we have a Giant Panda, and I believe we have the Kind.
That Giant Panda's been one of my favorites lately.
And I'm not sure if there's still Oktoberfest around or Rocktoberfest, but if there is, get some of that. And last but not least, handcrafted in upstate New York, Applewood Smoked Whiskey.
Oh boy.
Brought to you by the good folks at Iron Smoke Whiskey. Mm-hmm. Two varieties. They have the regular apple smoked get you drunk whiskey and Rattlesnake Rosie's apple pie whiskey. Thanksgiving is next week.
There is nothing better you could bring to Thanksgiving.
Literally. Like, you don't even need a turkey. I'm just telling you.
You don't even need a racist uncle.
You don't even need a racist uncle. You don't even
they
need a turkey.
Turkey.
All you need
whiskey.
Is a bottle of Iron Smoke Rattlesnake Rosie's apple pie whiskey. So, ironsmokewhiskey.com. Back to me, Cam. I'm here. Beautiful. I thought we were still on the screen. I wasn't even looking at the monitor. I'm a terrible host, but we're glad that you're here. We're going to be back after these few words about our upcoming shows at Comedy at the Carlson with the show off himself, Dolph Ziggler.
Woo!
Stay tuned. It's that part of the show again where I tell you about our upcoming shows here at Comedy at the Carlson. November 15th through the 17th, we have Jimmy Schubert returning. Dr. Dirty John Valby, Thanksgiving Eve's Bash. November 21st. That's right, next Wednesday. Also next Wednesday, Joel Lindley will be live in the Rickles Room. Robert Kelly will be here November 23rd and 24th. Carlos Mencia, November 29th through December 1st. Bobby Slayton will be here December 6th through the 9th. Josh Wolf will be here December 13th through the 15th. Rob Little, December 20th and 22nd. April Macy, December 28th and 29th. New Year's Eve with Ross Bennett, December 31st. 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. shows. Chris Franjola, January 10th through the 12th. Preacher Lawson, January 17th through the 19th. Vicky Barbalak, January 24th through the 26th. Bob Saget, February 21st through the 23rd. Samuel J. Comro, April 18th through the 20th. That's right. Those are some big shows right here at Comedy at the Carlson. If you want to get your tickets, visit carlsoncomedy.com or call 585-4-COMEDY. We hope to see you at a show soon. Now back to our regularly scheduled. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit carlsoncast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review. All right, we are back. And joining us in studio, the one, the only, the incomparable Mr. Dolph Ziggler.
Oh, woo! Incomparable. I like that.
It was so quiet for about 30 seconds before that, and it got really loud. I think you're used to that.
Very much so, sadly.
Fix that camera.
Just a bit there.
There we go.
Thank you, Brian. You're a great guy.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome.
Dolph, welcome back to Rochester for your second appearance.
Thanks for having me. I can't believe you guys are having us back.
I can't believe you're doing this show.
You were telling me earlier that there how this came to be, this show, the first time, and I'm very happy that the response was good enough that we're back. That's awesome.
Well, man, you pretty much sold out the first one.
Pretty close.
People were very upset that they didn't get to see you.
Yep.
So it's cool that you're back. I mean, Brian and I are both, like, wrestling fans, so when we found out you were doing stand-up,
we were very kind of puzzled by it and intrigued. Because here's the
I would
thing.
Say intrigued is intrigued. A better word than puzzled.
Well, hold on. Yeah, I'm puzzled, and I will explain why I'm puzzled, and I don't think that it's a bad thing to be puzzled. Because let's just start at the beginning here. You're an Ohio guy.
Yeah, Cleveland.
Wrestling your whole life. Went to college, got a degree in political science. You were pre-law.
Pre-law minor, no big
with
deal.
With a pre-law minor, oh, that's a very big deal. That's a pretty big deal.
That's the major I dropped out of.
Oh, that's my favorite thing to do. I love those classes.
Yeah?
Well,
yeah.
I mean, you're going to be a lawyer. You're looking at being a lawyer. And, you know, you were an amateur wrestler. You won some state championships, national championship, if I believe.
State championships, not in high school. In the summer when we do Greco and freestyle, I won the state title a couple times. But it's not as prestigious, but I got a little bit better in college. It's fine.
Okay. So as a kid coming
still
up,
learning.
What was your focus? Like, what were you focusing on being?
That's great. At five, so I tell the story a million times. At 5 years old, my dad took me to my first show.
Okay.
And it was in the Richfield Coliseum because Cleveland didn't even have an arena.
We're talking about a wrestling show.
Yes.
Okay.
So the Cavs didn't even have a place in Cleveland to play. You had to drive an hour out of town to the Richfield Coliseum to see the Cavs play. But that's also where WWF at the time had a show. And I was just like, oh, cool, I'll check it out. We sat far away. And it was actually really hard to see. There's no screens and no things like the trials like they have now. So we were far away in the nosebleed seats, and I didn't really know too many of the guys. But I knew – so I remember I have a little still shot in my head. It's the British Bulldogs versus the Hart Foundation in a steel cage match. And Hulk Hogan versus Harley Race was the main event. And I don't remember too many things other than that. But I was like, this is fun. Oh, also, they played the national anthem, and I told my dad we shouldn't stand for it. Not in 2018. This is 35 years ago.
You were making a stand.
Yeah, like, listen, I'm making a stand. Because in my head, it was Nikolai Volkov playing the Russian one, but it wasn't. But I was like, oh, Dad, no, we got to sit down for this, you know, and it was the real one. So I was like, or the real one, the American one. And I was like, oh, wait, never mind.
So a 5-year-old watching Hulk Hogan and Harley Race in the ring, did you think Hulk was, like, killing that old man?
Yeah, I was like, you could almost picture him smoking, which everyone, when they do their Harley Race impression, he's like, and he puts it down. Or, it's so funny. But we were so far away, I couldn't tell. It was, like, you know, the different build of yesteryear. But also, certainly I'm sure he was controlling that entire match from step one to the ending. So, but as a fan, I was, of course, it was Hulk Hogan. I was like, well, this is awesome. I told my dad when it was over, I go, I want to do this. And he goes, okay. So I started wrestling like a month later. But no, I was 5 years old, but it was nothing crazy. It's nothing like now where you go private tutor and you know, kids may their dads have them wrestling 2 and 3 weight classes at a tournament. And it was one night a week, once or twice a week, 2 hours with some of my friends, and I enjoyed it. So it was like, it wasn't like forced on me. I liked it, and then I ended up sticking with it.
He wasn't like Dance Mom.
No, it was. I know today, even people who kind of enjoy, like their kids enjoy sports, they have them. There's private tutors. There's the big practice with everyone else. There's other things. We're gonna hit this tournament, and this tournament on this weekend when you're off. And you're like, as a kid, it was bad enough going. I wanted to go to camps, but it was summertime. Everybody's off school.
Right.
7 a.m. I had to go into camp. I'm like, what am I doing here?
Luckily, my kids have no athletic talent whatsoever.
Lucky.
So that's never
so
been
lucky.
An issue for me. They just get to be kids.
That's the life.
So like when you're a kid there and you go and you see WWF and then you go and you start doing like amateur wrestling style, Greco-Roman style stuff. You're like, when does the cage come down? Do you feel that way at all?
I have an absolute. I walked in that first Friday night. And I and wasn't doing a joke or a bit. I looked around and I go, where's the ring and the ropes? And my dad goes, this is very different.
Right.
But if you stick with this, maybe one day. Oh, okay, sure. So I genuinely thought there was going to be a ring when I walked into that first practice. And there wasn't. And I was like, oh, okay. And it was actually, it's a little boring till you get into it. And then if you get really good, or if there's like the national finals of collegiate wrestling, if you're not a fan, you'll be bored out of your mind because no one scores. They keep countering everyone else. But me, I'm a fan. You're like, yeah, this is great.
Right.
It's almost like if you don't watch soccer and you watch it and no one's scoring, you're like, most Americans. And you go, what the hell is this?
The most boring thing.
Yeah.
But there's a stadium of 40,000, 100,000
or
people
more. Yeah.
Losing
going nuts.
Their minds.
Yeah. So I loved it. And, I stuck with it, and it was fun.
Where did you first get exposed to stand-up? Like, I mean, how did that even become part of your life? Where did you first start seeing it?
My brother and I, every time we went to the store or did, like, if my mom sent us to the store to grab milk, we would go get it, we'd come back, and I'd just be like, well, my mom's like, everything okay? Yeah, it was fine. I think Ryan nicked someone's door when he got out of the car, but I don't know. We didn't really check into it. And then, he'd be like, well, no, that guy kind of opened his door into our door. And I'm like, oh, what? And I was like, yeah, I guess the cops were kind of called. And we would just go on and on. And we've been doing that for 30 years with my mom. And to where she got so smart to it, we had to make it more concise and not as outlandish. But we've been constantly doing that and coming up with writing material and doing things. I filled notebooks.
What would you do if the house was on fire and she just didn't believe you?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. Like, we've cried wolf 11,000 times. Like, we deserve to just be locked in the house then, probably. But we did that so much, and it was so fun that we just kept doing things. And like, my brother's in LA now doing sketch stuff. He's writing pilots. He does improv like weekly, and it was just like, it's fun to constantly keep doing that. And I liked Saturday Night Live, and that's one of the first times I saw Saturday Night's main event was waiting to watch Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. So like, that entertainment aspect of everything all kind of combines, and like stand-ups and wrestlers and even some like actors, like they live that same life where you're going town to town, you're doing your show, and I've always admired that.
I've always thought that other than the extreme athletic ability and the hours and hours and hours of training and all of the ability to take punishment, wrestling's just like stand-up.
Yeah, it's exactly the same.
Those two things,
that's a funny joke, but it's also very true. It's like you have these things where you're doing something, and if some nights people are loving it, and some nights it is silent, and you have to go think of an improv or do some crowd work or something, and then like that's the exciting part. Like, you don't want anyone to be injured in WWE, when someone gets hurt or someone messes up, I like the fact that I'm known as the guy who can take it over and make it all work. So having that, all your brain's always running, that where you can know, even if it's four guys, six guys. I was in a I forget what you call it, but it's a six different pods.
Elimination chamber.
Yes.
Yeah.
And
I'm such a mark. Isn't that what they call it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't really watch the show, probably.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, and that's six guys, and something happens the wrong way, and maybe someone's let out five people before they're supposed to, and you have to call a six-person match on the fly in the semi-main event of a pay-per-view and get everyone on the same page, and that's something that I've had to do before. So, like, that stuff, it's really exciting, but it's frustrating and crazy, but that makes you want to keep doing it, you know, so you don't get bored.
And see, that's the thing. I mean, when you do anything that you love doing, and when it's your job, it becomes a chore, you know? It's like, sure. Never as much fun as it is when you were just chasing it for the love of it. Right. So, like, I kind of get, and what I guess puzzled me was, why stand-up? And now I'm hearing your brother has a background in improv, stand-up, and writing and stuff like that, and you two just kind of grew into it together.
Yeah, it's that entertainment, like, always, I wasn't a class clown at all. I did a little bit of everything, but I wasn't a class clown. I did sports. I did, we had a homeroom that was, it was on TV. So like our homeroom, we made it like a 10-minute newscast kind of. Right. So I was—
In essence, we're just AV nerds in this room.
Right, so yeah. Perfect. So I took that as a class because I had gone through my art stuff and there was something offered like to be behind the scenes. So I did some behind the scenes stuff and like wrote the script, but also was the on-air host. So I was like the newscaster for our homeroom. So I knew
all. They
always
make you the face of things, don't they?
Yeah, that's true. Very often, yes.
Always out front. Huh?
Yes, and which I need because I was either held not enough or too much. I forget, but it was so fun. I made friends with all the band people, with all the people who did the plays behind the scenes, and I played every sport there was. So I was friends with everybody, but I wasn't a class clown. It was just like I was interested in it and wanted to get into it and wanted to get those laughs and wanted to get smart laughs. So my brother and I would just constantly throw material back and forth. And like I said, for the last 15 years or so, I've just been filling up notebooks with what, you know, things that just drive me insane and trying to make them funny.
So how did you decide to even step on stage for the first time? Like, where did that come from? Like, were you just by an open mic and said, let me give this a shot, or did you deliberately plan an attack?
Oh, no. I have so much respect for the business that I found it's very similar to my business, where I wouldn't want someone walking off the street going, oh, I made my friends laugh at work, I'm just going to, this will all work out. And I don't know, there's like a little respect there that you need to have. But I'm such a nerd for comedy and wanting it to be good, and everything that I do wanting it to be good, that I crammed and did homework and wrote notes and tried things out and said, okay, I love doing this, I love following it, let's see if I can get that same excitement that I had in my first wrestling match, waiting to tag in, of like the butterflies in your stomach going, oh, here we go, I hope we get it. And when it went well, and when you got off stage, you're like, that scared the hell out of me, I can't wait to go do that again. And I got that feeling from my first wrestling match and my first stand-up set.
And you obviously, it was probably kind of similar in that you didn't start like wrestling in a sold out Madison Square Garden.
Exactly.
You started in a,
I was in a,
as they say, a bingo hall somewhere.
Basically,
like
I was, even though I never did the independents, I at WWE was in their training grounds in Louisville, and I was on like their beginners class of people who were non-contract, let me be on their show, and I was waiting to tag in, more nervous of anything in my life going with 80 people there or something.
And your stand-up was probably the same way.
Exactly. Yeah. It was Silver Lake, back room of a coffee house with about 35 people, 25 of them on their phones. Walking up to the microphone, just going, don't drop the mic, don't drop the mic, just say the Chipotle thing. And it just like, and it was so scary. But 2 weeks earlier, I was in front of 78,000 wrestling a tag match at WrestleMania, laughing in the ring. So it's just like, two different, but it's that feeling was there where you're like, oh, here we go. And I said something, I said the line, the first opening line, and it felt like 2 minutes went by of silence. And it was probably 2 seconds. And 3 of the 10 people laughed, and I went, okay, here we go. And I was actually on the show. So I had no business being on the show.
Right.
But because of a Twitter following and friends I made from them, they let me be on a show. But they said, listen, there's a real headliner on the show. Andy Kindler's dropping in and doing 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're going to have to follow him because, you know, you shouldn't be on the show, but we're friends. I go, great. I go, I totally
awesome,
get it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I go, I get it. That totally makes sense. And I happened to say that first line. I heard those three laughs. And I like caught my breath and I just happened to look and he was supposed to zip out and he happened to be standing up against the wall and he was laughing at something I said. And I go, this is the greatest feeling in the world.
No, it's the best,
and it
yeah.
gave me to finish the next 3 minutes that I had or whatever. And got off there just like shaking and it was great. It was such a great experience.
Well, it's very interesting to me because, you know, there's obviously different types of nerves. People feel like when they go into something that they're confident with, that they've been doing their whole lives, great. And then when they branch off and try to do something completely different from that. Now, even though we've established that wrestling and stand-up in a lot of ways are the same, they're also kind of different.
Sure.
They're also kind of different.
Yeah.
At a wrestling match, when you go out in the ring and you have to do a promo right in the middle of the ring and you're talking to however many thousands of people are there, they give you a lot of things that you have to say.
Right.
And you know, it's not necessarily your intellectual property that you had to put out there.
Right.
But you have to get it over with your personality. So there's that. But then when you go up onto a stand-up stage, it's a lot more personal because it's the material that you wrote.
You wrote this.
Yeah.
You're saying it. I mean, there's no one to blame. And even with wrestling, like you might have a partner or someone out there. They're not looking at two people. Everyone's looking at you going, we're watching every move. Make us laugh. And you go, oh, shit. You know, like,
isn't it preferable in some ways, though? Like, I always think musicians, when they talk about, like, I could never be a musician. I couldn't be in a band and have to rely on five
your
other
kids
assholes.
Can't play sports.
That's
you can't be in a band.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Just a dark room at your place.
No,
you just turn a light on and off.
I'm saying I'd rather it be all my responsibility than have to rely on somebody
else. That's great. And I feel that way, too. But it's also I'm comfortable with there's always two people out there. Even though, for the most part, since, I don't know, probably the last 10 years, I'm someone who's usually calling it or saying what we're doing because I've studied it and worked so much at it to have it. But here, it'd be hard to, like, you have to be responsible for five different people doing five different things.
Yeah.
But you could also, like, I was the face of my homeroom news team. I might as well be the front man for the band that we're not really in, you know? So I make it work, but it's weird. A giant crowd is might be scary to someone who works in a cubicle, but like a giant crowd is somewhat more free and you can have more fun. And when you have 30 people
so
in that
easier.
Back room in Silver Lake and they're like, yeah, who are you? What do you got? And you're like, uh-oh. It's that freaks me out.
I've always said I don't like crowds that I might have to face individually
on the way around your car.
I might have to deal with every single one of them.
It's a solid point.
Yeah, that'd be the worst. Like, luckily, they're usually dark. You can only see the front row people. You gotta zing on their birthday or their bachelorette party or whatever. But
I think when people start off with a laugh the first time, like you did, then it makes it a lot easier to keep going with it. And it's probably unfortunate in a lot of ways because Brad Williams, he explained it really well, and I've heard many people describe their first laugh as heroin. You're just like, I need more of that.
That's exactly how you feel. I got off. I just wanted to get through it. I was ready to puke, and I finished at 3 minutes or whatever, and I go, oh, my God, I want to do that again, and I'm just going to reword this other thing, and it's just got me thinking. But it's also I have this weird thing to where – I'm moderately famous in this other business. So if people are coming to see me, they're either coming to see me be this awesome wrestler, but I'm also in the amateur stages of I'm trying to get these reps in, and I'm doing 10 minutes of completely untested, except in my backyard to a cactus material tonight, to where they're like, oh.
How to go with the cactus.
We thought, no response. So,
tough crowd.
Yeah, I never saw a cactus cry before. It could have been the weather.
But they have liquid in them, I've heard.
Yeah, for years and years.
Sure.
I guess I'd rather die out 100 years earlier than finish. But it's free because you have, like, if they're coming to see you because of WWE, you have one half. It's you have that Jerry Seinfeld in 2018 walks out on the stage and we're already laughing and applauding. And we're like, oh, this is so funny. Like, he didn't say anything yet. Or you have that Silver Lake back room where they're like, make me laugh, person I don't know.
Yeah.
And you have to meet them in the middle. And so they're happy to see you. But also you can't genuinely judge your content based on that because I'm probably not going to learn too much from this show tonight. But when I open for Sarah at a in some other city where no one knows me and I have the hat on and they go, hi, I'm Nick. I was at Chipotle trying to get extra guacamole. And then you can actually see if, oh, this works, this doesn't. But sometimes you have that, you know, it's good. You got a bunch of butts in seats because of WWE, but you can't totally judge your content.
How often do you ever just go up his neck?
Yes, there's a Chinese restaurant by my house. And I don't get to go there as often as I would like to because I'm very constantly on the road. But if I'm home on a Wednesday, which sometimes I am, I tuck the hat down and I go, I'm Nick. I live a couple blocks away. Here's why the old people were bullying me at the gym today at LA Fitness or something. And that's where I genuinely get – you don't genuinely get it because like that Silver Lake show – the comics who are all waiting to do this open mic mm-hmm. are eating and going over their notes.
And don't give a shit.
So yeah. They don't give one shit about you unless there's the one or two in there who know me from wrestling. They're watching like, I hope this guy sucks. And you're like, oh, great. And he's like, that's not funny. You're like, thank you. And it's so.
But at least you learned something.
Thank you for your constructive
but
criticism.
But you learn. Like, I was very lucky on that first show. I got laughs because I had a girlfriend years ago who was like, you are going to bomb at some point. And it's going to crush you, and you're going to never forget about it, but then you got to keep going. And I've been very lucky so far. But at that Chinese food restaurant, I went up there, and I said a couple things that I had written that day, and three of the four went to silence, even to the two people who were watching me. And I could just feel my face get red, and I go, I'm a failure. I'm a fraud. What am I doing here? Right back home, rewriting and ripping the pages up and waiting to go back next Wednesday.
I feel good to know that Nick is bad at comedy.
Dolph is great.
Dolph's unstoppable. Yeah, he's a champ.
But you keep doing it, and you don't need this shit.
That's why I'm puzzled. You
know, that's why we're so intrigued. I
really, really enjoy it and so much and very much like WWE. Like I don't want to half-ass it and I don't want to be like, oh, this will be fine. Or like, oh, I didn't get that many laughs. Who cares? This is my real job. But I like it so much and have so much respect for it that I want it to be so good every time and get better. And I know that I need 10,000 reps before I even figure out my friggin' voice or what the hell I'm going for.
Yeah.
So I make sure in my head I'm not ripping off David Spade and some George Carlin bit that I saw that I'm actually doing.
Did you know there were 7 words you can't use on Raw? Yeah.
There's a lot of words you can't use on Raw right now. I think it's a lot more than 7.
Yeah, might be more. 7 words you can use for me.
But that's when the switch flips. You said find your voice. I always say like you figure out what the hell you sound like. That's when the switch flips and it becomes easy.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that I need 5,000 more reps.
That day you'll know, and you'll just be like, oh, that's what I sound like when I talk.
Right.
And then it works.
And even subconsciously doing, because when I first started wrestling, I was, without knowing it, I was trying to be Mr. Perfect. And I was trying to do it because I had watched his tapes and studied them.
Yeah.
And I was just taking these, even in between something else, a mannerism, and I go, you think it's yours and it's not. And then you go, okay, I got to find my voice, find my thing. And it's just slowly you take a little bit from 5 different people and then kind of make your own thing. But that's after 5,000 matches. I'm at 8 sets of stand-up. I need 5,000 more to figure out what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting because, well, not for nothing, when you're doing a stand-up show in the middle of nowhere and nobody knows who you are, when you're doing a stand-up show and everybody knows who you are, what do you feel like is the biggest takeaway for you from the stage of the reactions from the smaller crowds? Like, what exactly, because you brought it up, but like, what do you take away from that?
It's cool because I've opened for my friend Kate Quigley a couple times, I've opened for Sarah a bunch of times, and it's this extra rush of, first of all, when you walk up and everyone's not giving you the Jerry Seinfeld 2018, like,
right.
They're just like, we're waiting for Sarah, get your shit over with quick. And you go, okay. So it's a much more of a challenge, but also if you get a laugh, it's so genuine and you know it is. Mm-hmm. And that's what drives, like, oh my God, they laugh, they don't even know what wrestling is. And I try to explain it to them. And so it's those things, it's where I learn what works and what doesn't a lot more, but it's so much more fun and it's more of a challenge because I could go, like I said, if I'm lucky enough to have a match at WrestleMania, I'll be so comfortable and ready to go. But when you have something like this and you're not expected to be on the card, no one knows who you are, they're a little standoffish, but that's how you get that laugh and you know you earned it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, answer me honestly. Which do you prefer?
I would love to give you like, oh, stand-up's my thing. I don't give a shit about wrestling, but it's not. It's just, it's so, I don't.
Well, I'm talking about the audiences. Do you prefer the audience that doesn't know you to the audience that does know you?
I'm smart enough to want to be so good at this that I clearly prefer the opening with the hair tied up, not knowing me, because I want to get good quickly and I want to do everything I can to get better every day. So, and I might sound like some bullshit answer.
No,
I want to, like, when I first started wrestling, I didn't do independents, and they brought me in as just someone who was an athlete and loved wrestling. So I go, how can I get awesome at this fast? So I did a beginner's class that were non-contract people in the morning before our practice. Then I would come do our practice. Then I would come at night. My buddy Mike Mondo had keys to the arena. He'd come in there and he would just chain wrestle with me. So I was doing three things a day when everyone was doing one. And I go, in a year, I'll have 3 years done. So I want to get these reps in. So I feel it's the same way with this. You have that excitement and you have that small crowd and you go, man, that did not work. Holy shit. But then I got to go find a different way to make this a joke.
Okay. So, you know, we talk again about the similarities between comedy and wrestling. But my question here is, when you're on the stage and you're in front of that crowd that doesn't know you, when you have your hair back, you have your hat on, what takeaways from the wrestling business, what things did you learn from the wrestling business that helped you get over with those crowds?
It's something that I excel at because I've only been writing and actually saying my words for a few, like 2 years now or whatever, but I'm quick with a zinger or a one-liner or a jab or something. And so when something doesn't work and someone's like some little, like a wisecrack or a heckler or something, I can zip on them so fast that even if you hate everything I've just said, it's usually a pretty good zinger on whatever that person is.
Right.
And because I've been doing that for 25 years. And so that's something that I keep telling myself I need to work on, is just interact with the crowd, because that's where I excel. And Sarah and I will do a Q&A at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where it's just like, here's something off the cuff and someone will yell out something and I zing them back and they're like, oh, and it's like, that's how you get them. And then you start to learn some things in your repertoire of like, oh, that really got that guy. Let me write that down. That'll be good for a wrestling fan, or that'll be good for a non-wrestling fan. Right. And you go record it or write it down.
And unfortunately, I learned the hard way, you're not allowed to super kick hecklers.
Oh.
I learned that the hard
way. I didn't really read the paperwork that I signed.
I looked at it. It's not in there.
Jack Tunney told me that I could do whatever I wanted.
Good old Jack Tunney.
I couldn't super kick a squirrel.
I heard a story that he told his family that his position was a legitimate one. And I heard a story, I don't know, and I heard after he had passed, his family was maybe looking for some retribution or something. So if anyone knows that story.
Retribution?
You're like, does he get some severance pay? Right. Is there some? So
retribution, I'm thinking like, what did Vince kill him?
No. Yeah, they were looking for revenge? I don't know what that means. And I just heard that his family was led to believe that it was a real position.
That he was the commissioner of the WWF.
They assumed he was president, I think. I forget.
That's right. I thought it was commissioner. Yeah. I don't remember.
He might have been both. Who knows?
R.I.P. Jack Tunney.
I heard it was a genuine position, and they were like, "Well, what kind of package do we get here when he passes?"
But so I want to say I totally respect your dedication to stand up. I totally do. But I need to know your favorite Jim Cornette story, please.
I have. I was very lucky to work for Cornette for a little bit in Ohio Valley Wrestling, and it's probably not my favorite story because everyone tells such great ones and does better impressions than I can. But I do know I was very early on. I was like 2 months in there, and we had I was in a dark match after their TV taping, and I'm going to forget all the players, but Ken Doan was in the match with me. And are you guys really good fans?
I think so. Better than average.
Do you remember Nova's two big Simon Dean, when he used to ride the thing, he had two security guys with him at one point. They're twins. Shane twins? No.
I remember the
big Rod, twins.
The Harris twins. I remember
it was these guys.
I don't remember that. I remember Simon Dean.
And they were nice guys, and I forget their names.
You could show a picture of Jim Cornette on my screen just so everybody knows who we're talking about.
There it is.
He does require a visual aid.
Absolutely. I'd be disappointed if there was no tennis racket.
He's a special guy.
So he's He has this amazing brain for wrestling, and I'm a huge fan of his. But also, a lot of people have funny stories because he snaps all the time, which is like it's his thing, and it makes his voice higher and funnier.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, that's his thing. And I forget what the hell we did, but we had a match, and it was very much not his liking. I was 2 months in, and it was my maybe first or second dark match, and in the minors, and we did this match, and we came back, and he went down the line berating everybody with different insults, almost like he had written material.
Like that scene in Dirty Work with Joe Pesci.
Going down the line.
Like Full Metal Jacket.
Boom. And he's
more like a Southern
everybody.
Full Metal Jacket.
Yes.
Okay.
And he's everybody, but not funny, but like, it's funny, the things he's saying, I wish I could remember, but he got to me and goes, "And you, well, that wasn't that bad, but you've done worse, or you've done better." And I was like, "That was my first match or something." And he goes, "But anyway, God, what's the line? If you ever work in this company again, it'll be because I don't, to me personally."
Wow.
And I go, "Oh." So he leaves. Everyone's like, "Yeah, what the hell was that?" And I assume I'm fired from WWE. So I'm sitting in the thing, I shower, and I'm just like packing up my bags. I'm like, "Man, what, this is crazy." And everyone's like, "Yeah, it was crazy, right?" I was like, "Yeah." I'm like, "No one's taking this more seriously." I was like, he just berated all of us and fired me. And I was like, "Man, all right." Well, they're like, "Oh, it's tomorrow 8 a.m. I'm like, "I don't have to come in." I'm like, "I'm fired." He goes, "Oh, no. He's going to fire you every couple of weeks for the next 10 years. And I go, "Oh, okay." He goes, "Oh, yeah, are you kidding me?" Like, someone goes, I think it was Nova, it was Simon Dean. He goes, "I've been fired 25 times here." I'm like, "Oh, okay." But the way he said it was not a joke. It was like, this. "If you ever work a day here in this company again, it'll be because I'm dead or gone or something." I go, "I just assumed I was fired." And but it turns out, no, the next day he was laughing and showing me how to slap somebody in the face by repeatedly slapping me in the face.
Sounds okay.
Yeah. But ironically,
that's how you learn. It's like burning your hand on a stove.
Ironically, one of you does still work in the company.
I am a Jim huge, Cornette's like, he's so, he hates wrestling now. He likes 70s, 80s.
Oh, but I love his podcast. It's my favorite thing. I love listening to it. He gets so angry about everything.
He's always gotten so mad about everything. But he's so smart and so good that I would go out to dinner just to listen to him tell stories any day of the week.
I'm only going to ask one wrestling question since Vinny did.
Fair enough. You each get one.
You each get one. This is a quick one. If you are a sole survivor
my
on
world
Sunday,
title run?
Would you be the first three-time sole survivor?
Oh, God. I feel like you're a better fan than I am.
I saw you had two, and I couldn't think
Do
of anybody
I have
that
two?
Did three. Yeah, it says you have two.
Oh, yeah. Three? I don't know. I'm not as good a fan. How's Randy? Has Randy got like one or two or something?
Probably.
He's probably got a couple.
He's got
There's a lot with two.
Really?
But I don't think there's
I didn't know I had two. I know I had one. Yeah, I do have two, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Beat Randy once. I remember that.
Interesting.
Yeah, I guess. But I feel like I have such powerhouses on my team. If I survive, it'll be with at least two other guys. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be Soul, because they are a lot stronger than I am.
Yeah,
in many ways.
You do have some very large.
Yes.
What are the mountain of man meat, as they call Braun Strowman, whatever it is. I heard someone call him that the other day.
It's pretty good.
Where?
Yeah.
Who are you that somebody was doing that?
Sizzler or something?
Some podcast.
Before I forget, I have a gift for you. A friend of ours came through, a Rochester native actually. Told me to give this to you. Could you hand that to Mr. Ziggler, Brian?
Yeah, I'm afraid to look.
That's a gift to you.
Oh,
that fell. This is a.
It's a shred of his clothing.
Yes, that he left for you.
A shred of clothing.
Yes, that is from.
Dolph, I'm watching you. Stay limber. Dalton Castle. You know what? I have a couple takes. I thought it was Teddy Hart when I saw the outfit.
Hold it up.
I saw only the outfit, and I assumed it was Teddy Hart, who I'm a big fan of.
Sure.
But then I thought it might be one of the Steel Panther guys, but you said Rochester native.
Yeah.
And then all I'm watching you is, if you can see the eyes, no matter where you go in the room, the eyes follow you and watch you. So
I thought it was Jack Black for a second.
Yeah, is this School of Rock? I will hang this on my refrigerator with all the other 8x10s I collect.
Oh, I bet. I bet you have a lot.
Big collection.
So I was asked specifically to give that to you. So.
I appreciate it.
Now, let's talk about tonight's show, shall we?
Finally!
That's what I'm excited about. Thank you for allowing us our indulgences with the wrestling questions.
Sure.
Sarah Tiana is amazing.
Yes.
How did you two meet? She's fantastic.
I'm a nerd for comedy, so I would always hang out at the Comedy Store if I had a day off or two in L.A., and I would just go watch shows or just talk to the people who mingle outside and through Twitter and making jokes. And I think we met on Twitter just like telling jokes or something like that, and then I bumped into her at the Comedy Store. We became friends, and she's such a hard worker, and she books all the shows, and she works headlines all around the country, that she was like, hey, how about you want to open for me when I'm in Arizona? And then it started there, and then she saw that I took it very seriously, so let me open for her a couple other times, and then was like, hey, why don't we put together a show? And so she's a cool chick who's a really good friend, and loves comedy, loves doing it, and is so good and funny that like that, it's so great. Those a couple of times where I could open for her, and no one is there to see me. They're all there to see Sarah, and then I know that one, some things are gonna fall flat on my face, but I'm gonna learn some stuff from those shows. And now we've got this rapport that most people who come to the shows, one, are surprised that I don't suck at comedy, which really bumps me out. But I was like, hey man, you don't base my win loss record on if I'm good at comedy or not.
Right.
But two, they said they love that we have this fun rapport back and forth. So when we do the Q&A, she knows a little bit of wrestling, so just enough where she can claim she doesn't know what she's saying when she's reading a question that she knows will be bothersome to me, but also we can zing each other back and forth. And we did that roast battle together because we know each other so much, and we wanted to just have fun. So it's a great combo. She's a genuine headliner, and I'm figuring it out, but also can get some butts in the seat, so we make a good little team around the country.
And you can learn just watching her.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I want for the record to go right on the record here that Comedy at the Carlson was the first comedy club to headline you.
This is the absolute first time. Wow. Absolute first one was Carlson, and I'm usually neurotic and freaked out, and for 2 or 3 hours I'm sipping Jack Fires and pacing and rewriting and ripping up my notes, and knowing that I was headlining this show freaked me out even more. I go, I owe these people to be good at this, and somehow, some way, it all worked out to where it was good enough that we're back to do it again.
Well, I'll tell you what, I remember that night very well. I was hanging out in the green room with you a little bit, and I don't know you too well. I just, you know, was trying to let you have your process, and you seem to me someone who was taking things incredibly seriously.
to the point where I
was almost worried for you.
Bad because I'm not, like, because this is fun and you can bullshit and stuff, but man, when it comes to that, like right now, I'm like, keep looking at my phone. I'm like, oh my God, it's almost 6 o'clock. That means in an hour and a half, I'll only have 45 minutes. And it's like, I'm pacing and rewriting and rewording and going, oh, is this the day everyone finds out I'm a giant fraud? Is today the day? And you go, no, it's going to be fine.
You can super kick your way out of the
room. Yes,
you'll be fine.
I think so. I can take most of those. I know the girls in the crowd. Both of them.
I believe you there. I believe you there.
I remember I was out of town, and Vinny actually, I'm going to pull back the fourth wall, whatever it is.
I don't care what you
do. He actually texted me and said, He's like actually serious and really nervous, because I was like, how's Dolph? Like, just fanboying going, how's Dolph? He goes, yeah. He's really nervous. Yeah. It's so cute.
And I try not to be a jerk.
He didn't say cute. He goes, he takes it really seriously.
He batted eyelashes at the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my style.
And I try not to be a jerk, because it's fun and I'm having fun, but I'm so, I'm so mad that I don't have those reps, that I have to have notes, and I just want it to be perfect and great, that I'm probably a jerk for that hour and a half, but I try not to be so much. I'm just like pacing and like looking.
There's nothing jerky about you. I just saw someone back there who was,
yeah,
I really just got to do good.
Yeah, yeah.
I just tell me I'm going to do good. And it was like, it was very intense, and I really respected you for that. I mean, I said it earlier, I respect how dedicated you are to it.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see. I know you were on, I think it was Instagram Live the other night, saying you have new material for tonight's show.
Yep.
So,
completely untested, which is usually like my material anyway. But
you know what, though? They're here to see Dolph tonight. Yeah. So there you go, baby.
But still, Nick will come out there a little bit. Yeah.
Good.
During the quiet times.
You have a show, we'll plug this, because people listen to the show all over the country.
Awesome.
And if you are listening to this, please make sure you hit subscribe on YouTube or visit carlsoncast.com and check out all the links to iTunes, Laughable, Spotify, where all the podcasts are. But you doing this podcast was huge. It was very kind of you. We really appreciate you doing it.
Very much so.
You have a show coming up At the Joke Factory. Or not the Joke Factory. Oh, holy man. Shit.
The Joke
Factory. The Comedy Store.
The world famous Comedy Store, wow. Bro.
It's a long story. That one's back in my head. There's another place. The Comedy Store. It's Dolph Ziggler and Friend.
DZ and Friends. Tonight it's DZ and Friend. Okay. But, you know, when we get to the Comedy Store, it's DZ and Friends because we have Survivor Series in Los Angeles. So, we've said before, I'm a nerd for comedy. I've been walking up there for 10 years and just milling around outside. And now DZ and Friends is coming to Hollywood at the Comedy Store. There's going to be wrestling surprises, surprise guests. My brother will be there and some stand-ups who know their way around wrestling and a little bit of everything. Hopefully this kicks off Survivor Series weekend and it's going to be a fun time for everybody. Of course, what a lot of fans love is the VIP meet and greet the most because they'll bring their action figures or things to be signed and stuff. And so we'll have a little bit of both of those. Okay. And of course, I say live Ask the Heel, but it's a Q&A. But Ask the Heel is my way of saying Q&A. But that's usually the best part. Sarah busts my balls and I zing her back and it's fun.
You prefer being a heel, do you?
Since college, yes.
Vinny's been doing it since birth.
Yeah, I got a problem.
Pretty good. You have to turn at some
it's
point.
It's getting
you know?
A little old, yeah. He needs a brief face turn just for a year or two.
Yeah, you know, I want people to, you know, finally get on my side for once. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
That'll be
first time
great.
For everything.
Yeah, exactly. So if you want your tickets, come see Dolph Ziggler tonight. The show starts at 7:30. There is still time, Roger, to get your tickets. Call 585-4-COMEDY or visit carlsoncomedy.com. And get out here. You got a little bit of time left. Don't miss out. The meet and greet's starting any time now. So that's going to be very exciting. What's the weirdest thing somebody's ever said to you at a meet and greet?
Man, I can't think off the top of my head, but someone showed me pictures of, like, Google Maps of, like, an overhead view of my house.
Jesus Christ.
And they were like, I know you live here. And and they also showed me a picture, like, at the mall near my house from, like, 100 yards away. And I was like, oh, cool. So I played it so cool that I didn't want to tip them off to be like, hey, this is weird. Don't kill me and wear my skin one day. I was just like, oh, cool, man. And then just moved on.
And
so just
from your house
I
to
played
a new
it
house.
Cool. Yeah, so now it's in a trust and it's under a different name, different city.
Jeez.
Wow. That's terrifying.
But a lot of people bring me books, which is awesome because I talk about books online all the time. I like reading and constantly trying to get better.
What's the last book you read?
I'm in the I just read a Jack Reacher book, which I love because they're always in the airports and I can read them on a plane.
Yeah.
I reread Fletch all the time. I just finished the Jack Reacher one. I can't remember the name of it. Maybe No Last Name or No Middle Name. I'm in the middle of Bad Blood, which is like a pharmaceutical about like the tech bubble coming up. And it's
interesting. Like, interesting. So you plan on ever just finishing up and taking the bar, do you?
Probably not. I thought probably about not. It a long time ago. A couple years back, I was like, should I give it a shot? But,
just going to be a comedian, right?
I'll wrestle on the side to pay the bills.
There it is. Dolph Ziggler, ladies and gentlemen. The great Dolph Ziggler. You don't need to clap for yourself. We're clapping for you, sir.
You never know. Another hand can always help.
Hope to see you back again sometime in the future because we love you here in Rochester.
Awesome.
We're
happy to be back.
We're wrestling fans, and we're glad to have you here on our stage anytime. So again, folks, get your tickets, carlsoncomedy.com. Cam, good job today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Brian, adequate job as usual.
Yeah.
We are going to be back in our usual time slot Friday morning with Jimmy Schubert. So tune in then, and bye now.
Goodbye.